Avalon Park had like Myron Franks and several and Olson Kings, you know, Sears. They'd have certain weekends during the summer that they'd have their company picnics at Avalon, and Johnny Fredericks would that owned Avalon would reserve the whole park for those big company picnics, but Al Hamilton that owned Romer's, they companies could hold their picnics there, but he wouldn't reserve the whole park for them exclusively. So, and the company picnics weren't nearly so wild because the boss would be there. And
tell me what type of swimming floats they had at Avalon Park, and did they have a dance hall there? And
yes.
Okay.
They also had a big dance hall.
They had a dance hall, so on weekends they have musicians coming.
And the tavern at the top of the hill, so they, people could go up and get beer.
Now, I don't recall if Avalon had a tavern.
I don't think so.
But Romer's certainly did.
Oh, okay. So Avalon had...
So Avalon was more sedate, family-oriented,
okay.
And the wilder bunch came to Romer's.
Okay, Avalon was a family park then, huh?
Yes.
So they had water slides and...
At
Avalon.
No, I don't think they had one there, but it was at... Romer's had the slide. And extremely dangerous thing.
Okay. So let's start back at the beginning a little bit, Bill and Anita. Let's see, Bill, whereabouts on the Tualatin River did you folks, they have a probably touching the river? Whereabouts did you live along there?
At the end of Elwin Lane.
I found it here. Remember I was showing you the little... where his parents divided the property and gave each of them.
It isn't even on here.
Okay, so Elmer Lane, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Is that how you spell it? E-L-M-A-N?
E-L-L, is
oh,
it?
Oh, two L's. Is it two L's or one L?
Is it?
Two.
I guess it's, yeah. It's
two L's. Okay. So you was raised in that area then?
From the time I was 14, in 1940, my folks bought the Omen House for a summer home, really. And they just loved living on the river, and they liked to canoe and play around out there, and they never moved back into town again.
Oh, okay,
they
good.
Couldn't stand it.
So where did you go to grade school then after you moved?
Well, I went to grade school in Gregory Heights grade school in Portland, and I graduated from there in 1940, and so when my folks decided to stay out in that area, you know, at the end of Elmond Lane, then my freshman year I went to Tigard High, and was there from 1940 to 1944.
So you had to swim across the river. How did you get this school from the south side of the Tualatin River?
Well, in Tualatin at that time, about half the kids in Tualatin, they were right on the border, and about half the kids in Tualatin went to Sherwood High School, and about half of the kids in Tualatin went to Tigard High.
Oh, okay.
And they had to cross the river because from Elmond Lane, we went up Boons Ferry Road to Tigard. there was a bridge there then.
Good.
But the school bus started in Tualatin, and then...
Okay, you rode a school bus at Taggart High then.
Yeah.
Good. All right, when did you first swim in the Tualatin River, and how many months of the year could you swim in the river?
Well, whatever you could stand to swim. I think we opened the park the year that I worked at the park in 1949. I think we went to work down there in April, I think, people just came out when they can stand it. When they can stand the cold, how cold the water was.
Was it always cold water there, pretty much? Never did up.
Oh, there was so little activity up the river. Once in a while, we towed a cellar door, somebody's old cellar door behind an outboard, and up the river a ways where there was no activity at all. And late in the summer, the first couple of inches of water were really warm. And we were using the, we didn't have water skis then, but that old cellar door that we just used for an aquaplane, I can remember the water had squirted up between the boards, and it was just like a warm shower, because you were only running on the top couple of inches of water.
So you had quite a few logs that you had to dodge too, floating logs?
Not that time of the year. But late in the summer, you can't fight water rights. They over-appropriated the water rights up the river so badly. You could throw something into water. Different parts of the river flow faster than other parts of the river, depending on how deep it was. But being a deep pool through there, it was slow.
Okay.
And the river is actually, right now, divided into 8 different study areas.
Oh, okay.
Anyhow, that particular part of the river, in August of that year, you could throw something in the water and candy wrapper or something, it would go downstream about 100 yards and stop, and then in the afternoon it would come back up. They were sucking the river backwards.
Oh, wow.
But, which is a horrible thing to do to a river, but...
And that's because of irrigation that they...
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
upstream.
Like I say, and over appropriation of water rights, you know, is what caused that.
So, what was the bottom of the river? Was it really muddy, and were there any water slides and stuff like that at Drummer's Rest? Did they have a rope that would tie to any trees and swing out and drop off, or didn't they have anything like that?
Not right at the park, no. We tried to, where we would drag the bottom in front of the diving boards and stuff periodically in case a semi-sunken log, you know, would drift in. We had signs in the rest of the park not to dive off the bank, because the banks were quite
shallow.
Well, they'd be about 8 feet high, and...
The river would be how deep then? How deep is the river?
Well, it had to be, I don't know exactly, but it had to be 12 feet or more right in front of those boards, because for diving, you know, it has to be pretty deep, and some people early in the year, the water was colder and the people weren't in as good a shape as they were at the end of the season before, and you'd always watch people that decided to, although it wasn't very far across the river, people would tend to swim across the river and back from you could tell. I'd watch those people be early in the year, especially because they'd get tired, you know, and they're always embarrassed if you had to help somebody out of the water.
So did they have a fence around the parks so it was only open certain hours of the day, certain seasons?
In those days, there wasn't an actual fence around the park.
Couldn't really get to it, though.
There was embankments.
It was down.
Okay, the embankment prevented anybody from coming.
And I think
from
Al probably had a chain across if he wasn't.
Yeah, I don't even remember, but I do remember that. You remember the deal about the softball field between him and Paradiso Park when he went in and bought the. He went into the bank and bought that. Remember the softball field that went into the park?
No.
Anyhow, that was a funny, isn't it?
I heard you were a lifeguard and you trained other lifeguards. So what was that like?
I was certified water safety instructor. I could certify people for a senior. And I think it's probably still the same. If somebody wanted a job as a lifeguard, they had to have at least a senior lifeguard rating. And I could certify lifeguards. And I also did some work with the Boy Scouts for that wanted swimming and boating merit badges.
Okay, let's see. Was there anything dangerous about being a lifeguard?
No. If you know what you're doing, it isn't.
Oh, okay.
It could be. Basically, the last thing you, particularly when I. Gave merit badges to Boy Scouts, you know, they'd say, well, I got a life-saving merit badge, you know, and after they got it, I'd tell them, now I'm going to tell you the facts of life. Mm-hmm. If the last resort is to ever go in the water to save somebody, because they're much stronger than they even realize they are, and to handle somebody in the water is very difficult. Look around. If there's a boat, take it. If there's a plank, take a sweatshirt, take a towel, swim out and flip it to them and tow them in with that.
Good idea.
This business of diving under and turning them around and taking them by the chin and towing them in is a lot of baloney. And one of the worst myths is that you've probably heard, well, just if they fight, just knock them out, you know. Well, you try it sometime with some friend of yours, see if you can get the footing to and swing to knock somebody out. They're going to grab your wrist and climb right up on your shoulders, and you're going to
go under. Huh?
You're going to go under.
So what was the greatest event that happened at the river park when you was there? Did you anything?
I went in the water one time when the boats that we rented out, in those days, if somebody rented a boat, Nita used to handle that up at the refreshment stand.
Oh,
and
there's somebody on that slide.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a picture of the slide?
No, not very much, just the person.
Oh my gosh. That's the deadly slide.
Okay, we'll take a copy of that after a bit.
Oh, sure. Amazing. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You got a post-it I stick in there?
Yep.
People, usually if you had to pull somebody out of the water, I didn't even know that was in there.
I don't see it.
If you had to pull somebody out of the water, I was getting paid by the month, not by, I wrestled more drunks than I did pull people out of the water that summer, really. Because there's no way to screen the people out of the swimming area. And the boats, I think, Lydia used to sell the hot dogs and rent towels and bathing suits
candy,
and that sort of thing.
Soft ice cream.
And ice cream. And, you know, if somebody's renting a boat, I don't think you even ask them if they can swim or not. If they rented a canoe, you'd say, can you swim? And of course, people almost invariably, oh, sure, I can swim. And if they couldn't, well, you'd toss them a life vest, but that was very seldom done. And they rented a boat. We only wanted about three people in these boats we rented because they were just a small plywood skiff. Well, they rented a boat, and there was about five or six people in it. And it only had about 2 inches of freeboard. It was so loaded with people.
Oh, wow.
And before I noticed, the boat float was separate. It was behind the lifeguard stand. But when I first saw him go out with this boat that was loaded so bad, they only went out about 20 or 25 feet, and of course it swamped and went down. Well, everybody that could swam in, but this one guy, the reason I didn't, generally I had what you call a ring buoy, a small buoy with a rope, and just toss that out to somebody and haul them in, which is the smart thing to do. He had pants and shoes on and sunglasses. He didn't have a shirt on, and he couldn't swim stroke one.
Oh, wow.
And people were yelling at me to dive in and, you know, get out there. And I say, wait a minute, I'm going to see who needs to be saved the worst.
Right.
Well, he was going straight up and down, and he couldn't level off and swim or anything. And I thought if I tossed a ring buoy out there, he didn't have his senses together enough to even grab it, I don't think. So I did swim out and get him. And as soon as I got a hold of him, fortunately, he relaxed because he realized somebody had him. He didn't fight me. And I had everybody in the picnic area says, oh, lifeguards out there trying to save, you know, saving somebody, and there'd be a big crowd of people that come down. And he was so embarrassed, I thought it was kind of strange that he took off his glasses and he looked around and he said, boy, I'm lucky, I still got my sunglasses. And he started walking away, and I was so startled, I said, buddy, you're lucky you still got your
life.
Your
ass. Good idea.
But there was some real, one of the strangest incidents. You see how low the water was, yeah, the deck, you know.
Yeah, uh-huh.
There was a couple that went out, a guy was teaching his girlfriend how to swim, and they decided to go out in the river. He thought that she was doing better. They thought she was doing better. They swam out in the river for a ways, but to turn around and get leveled off and swim back, she started to glove up and down, and so he reached over to help her, and she grabbed his arm and climbed right up on his shoulders.
Oh, wow.
And down he went. And I was walking over there to get a ring buoy and a rope anyhow at that time, because I knew they were going to be in trouble. So he came back up, and she grabbed him again and he went down, and all he could see was his arm up above the water going like this and waving. And I tossed a rig buoy out there between them, and they both grabbed it, and I pulled them in.
Oh, good.
And they turned around and sat there and coughed and snorted and everything, and then they said, why didn't you swim out and help us? You're supposed to be the lifeguard. And I said, are you crazy? I swim out there, you both grab me, and all three of us probably drowned, you know? And I was laughing about it, but, oh, they were indignant.
Okay, what else did they do at Romer's Rest besides swim? They have anything else there as far as entertainment,
well,
stages or?
They had a dance hall and all the latest records and things.
Okay, so they had a dance hall at Romer's Rest. So how big was that?
It's a large dance hall, large covered dance hall, about halfway down the hill.
And maybe 100 people, 200 people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they can take 100 people in there anytime. But generally it was jukebox. Yeah. Occasionally somebody would have a picnic or maybe a wedding reception or something, or wedding, you know, a dance.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And have some live music.
I've got to go. Yeah, you got several sets of car keys there? Okay, give me one because I got packages to put in your car.
Oh, there's some packages for you in the car too.
But what year did the Romer's Rest come to a close? Was that the 1950s or?
No, I think it was in about 53. I remember in 49, this is something of interest. In 49, we had the worst earthquake we ever had in this area.
Oh, yeah.
And it was early in the season, and I was checking out the gangway and the float, and we were painting boats and picnic tables and everything, and I had never been in an earthquake in my life, and there's never been one that severe here since. And I was on this huge gangway that was at least 6 feet wide, and it was cabled to some really huge elm trees, and I was the only one in the park. And I was jumping up and down on it to see if there's any bad planks or anything.
Uh-huh.
And when I stopped, there was waves going from one side of the river to the other, and these huge elms were waving, and I thought, I must be on the balance point of the whole river.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't even understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. But that was the worst quake that we've ever had in Portland.
So what did you do after you got done with high school? What did you journey on to next in your life? Adventures.
Oh, I went to work. A fellow came down and he was an executive at Interstate Battery.
A battery company, yeah.
A battery outfit. And he said, I could come to, you know, at the end of the season, come to work for me at our shop where we manufacture batteries. He said, I give you an inspector's job, you know. And I thought, boy, this is pretty slick. Well, actually, the jobs were not easy to get right then either, because a lot of companies were just switching over from, they were just starting to build cars again. At the end of the war in 45, they had to retool from tanks and planes and everything else, and new model cars didn't come out till 49. And anyhow, I found the inspector's job amounted to testing and stamping batteries as they came by, and then about the end of the year, they began laying people off, and I said, wow, I thought this would be a better job than that. And he said, oh, well, it's seasonal, you know, in January and February, we cut the staff down. And I went to work for around Christmas for the post office, and I was officially what they call a temporary substitute. Rural carriers, especially, any postman, they'd take their vacation in January because they'd want to
get out of the snow, huh?
Yeah. So every 2 weeks you'd take somebody's route, and about the time you really learned the route, they'd switch you to another one, and worked for the post office for several months. But
what year was that, approximately?
Well, that was 1950.
1950, okay.
January in 50. And 50 and 51 were the worst winters we've had since then. And in fact, when Anita and I, we cleared the brush and built that house where we are. We're on the high side of the river, we're on a high bank so we don't get flooded, but we do look down on the river. Mm-hmm. And Fano Creek and the river were in very good shape at those, you know, everybody swam there. And I saw the river and Fano go from very good to very, very bad, and now it's recovering wonderfully well. But
super high water then?
Huh?
Was it real high water in 51?
Well,
low water.
It was January at either 50 or 51. I think January in 50. I was out of work. In fact, the ice and snow were so bad, and nobody was hiring anybody for anything. Mm-hmm. And we had an ice box, and we started out building our own house, and we washed dishes in the laundry trays, and we had a folding table. We had a card table and two folding chairs.
So you were a carpenter in those days too, huh?
I had to be. And I can remember we had an ice box, and we had a double hot plate to cook on, but we were happy. We thought we were living. We took a sled down to Fano Creek and cut cakes of ice that were probably six, you know, at least 6 or 8 inches thick, you know, and hauled them up for our ice box. There wasn't anything else to do that winter. And the river froze over, I forget if it was January of either 60 or 61, it almost froze over completely where we're just above Tualatin, you know, and you could walk out on the ice on either side. Yeah. There was about one third of the river flowing right down the center. A couple of more, another week or so, you would have been able to walk clear across, but I've never seen it like that since then.
Good.
And we were heating with a wood stove because we cleared the trees we cleared to build the house. We cut them up and we're burning those for ourselves.
So when did you finish the house?
We lived in the lower level while we worked on the upper level. And it's a hillside house, so it steps down. Okay. It only has half the...
Half basement?
Yeah, the daylight basement. But I'm not sure when, I'm trying to think when we moved our bedroom and everything up to the main level. Uh-huh. But it took us, we never went into debt. We borrowed $1,000 originally to buy your lumber with, and no. We never were in debt any more than that.
So what year did you start? You remember what year you started building your house in, approximately?
We started in 48, but Anita didn't live there until 49. Her father was an all-around journeyman, excellent carpenter, plumber, electrician, everything. And he helped us get started, and he and I worked on it in the latter part of 48. He got us started, and then in those days you generally didn't live together until you got married.
Right. Uh-huh. Gotcha.
So in February in 49 we were married, and then shortly before we got our job at the park. And occasionally we took our own canoe. It's about 3 miles from there up to Romer's Rest. And occasionally we took our own canoe to work.
Oh,
commuted in our own canoe, you know.
That's a good
and,
story. Uh-huh.
And it was so peaceful, mm-hmm. We could run the river at night, because it's very seldom that it's I never saw a night so dark that the reflection off the river that you couldn't, and especially the way we knew the river, that you couldn't run it. So a lot of times we worked till after dark. Our deal at the park was we worked, we didn't have weekends off. That summer we had rainy days off. We got paid by the month. And we got rainy days off, and we were we were doing a rain dance part of the time, so we get a day off.
Oh, that's a good story. Okay, thank you, Bill, for that information, and we'll talk some more later.
I don't want to record this. Okay.